Stand, please. ODA, ODA, ODA. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please.
Morning, Council.
Morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is James Mitchell. I'm here as attorney for First Energy Solutions Corporation and Exelon Corporation. This case involves terms and conditions under which the Midwest Independent System Operator, which is a regional transmission organization under FERC practices, purchases reactive power from generators and in turn passes the costs of those reactive power charges on to transmission customers of the Midwest ISO. In 2004, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission ordered the Midwest ISO to adopt compensation policies under which all generators connected to the Midwest ISO transmission system, including both generators affiliated with traditional electric utilities and non-affiliated generators or independent power producers, were compensated so that they would all be compensated on an equal and non-discriminatory basis. The Midwest ISO complied with that requirement and modified its provisions in its transmission tariff to make sure that everybody was compensated fairly. Thereafter, a group of transmission owners within the Midwest ISO filed an alternative proposal in which they said, we would like to have the opportunity to opt out of the arrangements under which the generators in the Midwest ISO were being compensated for reactive power. And they said each transmission zone within the Midwest ISO should have the right individually to decide whether they would maintain the existing compensation mechanism that had been adopted by the Midwest ISO or whether they should be permitted to adopt an alternative compensation mechanism under which generators within their particular transmission zones would only be compensated for a limited amount of reactive power.
Council, can I give you a hypothetical that I believe states your problem as you see it. Imagine a two-zone region, zone A and zone B, and in zone A is generator one, and in zone B is generator two, and in zone A is a customer. Now, if I understand things correctly, the customer is in zone A. If it gets power from generator one, I want to clarify, in zone A, the transmission owners decide in favor of compensation. In zone B, they decide against compensation. If the customer takes power from generator one in zone A, then the generator doesn't have to worry. Is going to get compensated for transmission costs. The generator in zone B, generator two, is going to have to cover its reactive power costs, right?
That's correct.
So the point is that the generator two in zone B is disadvantaged vis-a-vis the generator in zone A.
That's correct.
And otherwise, the transaction is the generators in the two zones are otherwise in complete competition with each other.
Yes, and actually there are two types of discrimination we're talking about here. You've identified the discrimination in compensation to generators between zone one and zone two. At the same time, the way the process works in the Midwest ISO, the Midwest ISO pays the generator for reactive power in the particular zones, or, you know, right now pays everybody. Conversely, the Midwest ISO then turns around and bills transmission customers in each zone for the cost of reactive power that it procured within the zone. So not only is there discrimination in payment between to generators in Zone A versus generators in Zone B, but also transmission customers in Zone A will pay a different reactive power charge than paid by transmission customers in Zone B. So it's two sides of the same transaction, but it affects the different entities.
As far as the result in this case, if we focus completely on Judge Williams' hypothetical, the result is compelled by that hypothetical, is it not? We don't need to go to the any further stage.
That's right.
Right. Okay.
Maybe
you're not gaining a lot by further complicating the situation.
I hope I won't get in too much trouble. Yeah, under the Federal Power Act, it's not all discrimination that is barred. It's only undue discrimination. But the only reason for the type of discrimination that we've identified here, you know, is the whim of individual transmission owners as to whether they would like to opt into Zone A or, if you will, Schedule 2, under which all generators are compensated at full cost-based rates, or Schedule 2A, which is the more limited form of compensation. And
you argue that the transmission owners, in fact, will have skewed incentives depending upon their affiliations, but you don't depend. Your argument doesn't really depend on that, does it?
No, it doesn't. It's just again.
Whim argument is enough.
the point is that in this case, you know, there is no justification, no valid justification for the distinction between the treatment of people in Zone A and the treatment of people in Zone B.
One of the commission's supporting theories is that this is all de minimis, but I seem to recall, I don't have a notice of where it is, a reference to $11 million for, I don't know whether that was one particular generator or what.
Yes, that was one particular electric utility as part of the filing transmission owners. It was Ameren, Illinois. They calculated that under Schedule 2, their reactive power charges would be roughly $11 million, and under Schedule 2A, their reactive power charges, I think, were in the neighborhood of $200,000.
Uh-huh. That's out of a total cost of what? Probably large number.
It's substantially larger. Again, we're talking one a fairly large utility, but still one member of the Midwest ISO transmission system. There are, I believe, 28 or 30 members overall. But again, you know, the rates, the $11 million figure is based on cost-based rates that have been accepted by the FERC and determined pursuant to a fairly standard formula that the FERC has adopted for determining what is a reasonable cost-based rate for reactive power by generators. You know, the FERC has relied on its so-called comparability policy. As we pointed out in our briefs, the comparability policy really doesn't apply in the context of this of a regional transmission organization, you know, such as the Midwest ISO.
Your time is about it, Counsel. Thank you.
Yes. I appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
May it please the Court, Ashley Parrish for Dynegy Midwest. In light of the questions this morning, I'm not going to add too much, just a couple of points. Judge Williams, on the question that you're asking about, it's actually on page 21 to 22 of our opening brief, if that's helpful for you, but Mr. Mitchell summarized it exactly the way that I would in terms of the example. The only other point that I would highlight, which goes beyond the example, Judge Williams, which I think really does address our concern, is just the added point that really, even if you didn't think that was a concern, you'd still have to reverse and remand for problems of failed explanation. And Mr. Mitchell really highlighted that point, which is that the Commission's task here, in light of the regulations in the way that they've set up the Midwest ISO, this is 18 CFR 35.34, which requires that it be regional in scope, and that they not do anything that would cause competitive harm. And as well, of course, more importantly, the actual statute itself requires that the commission take a hard look at issues of discrimination. And our fundamental submission, even if the example didn't work and it works very well, would be that the commission would at least have to address that. And here they haven't done that. They've just relied on their policy. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, what I'd like to do is just reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Well, I do have one question. The commission seems to emphasize over and over that this reactive power cost is basically just a cost of being of doing business. So they say you shouldn't be compensated for it anyway. If that's where they're trying to get under your vision of this approach, can they ever do that?
Yes, so if I may sort of answer that in two ways, because it also echoes Judge Williams' question, let me first emphasize that the issue that the commission has recognized in other contexts and that the real concern here is not whether it's de minimis or incremental or whether it's an obligation or an entitlement. It's the competitive harm that results because the markets are very competitive, so the difference of a million to $11 million payment a year makes a big difference in your ability to compete between A and B. So it's really the competitive harm that's the concern. That also answers your question as to what's the way out. The specific answer is that once you've set up a regional organization like the Midwest ISO, as long as all the generators are treated equally, it doesn't matter whether or not the policy is the Schedule 2 compensation or the Schedule 2A no compensation. So if the commission wanted to apply a policy that would say in the Midwest ISO, no one will get compensation for that, we would have no objection on the discrimination front, and that would apply. The other, as a more sort of technical point, is that there is an entire stakeholder process, and this isn't something we raised before this court because it's more of a question of the commission's discretion, but one of the objections we raised before the commission was that this proposal should have gone through a stakeholder process that would have allowed all of the entities in the Midwest ISO to come together. That would be a process that even if there was something that wasn't a complete, out or in.
Nowhere near your first line.
Your Honor, that is absolutely.
The procedural argument is relegated to rental space in your brief in front of deserves very little.
You're absolutely right, and I was just giving extra nuance, but it's not important at all. It's a subtlety.
It may have been a nuance, but it wasn't really an answer to the question. You already answered the question.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, but that's exactly right.
Okay.
Is there any other questions? I'd be happy to answer.
Seeing none, we'll let you have the rest of your time back for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate
Thank
that.
Counsel, we'll hear from the government. Respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good Lona morning, Perry, Counsel.
For the commission. I expect that there's really no issue what I should be addressing right now, and I will talk about Judge Williams' hypothetical. The point that I would like to make about your hypothetical, Judge Williams, is that it makes the assumption that if there is a difference in the compensation as between Zone A and Zone B, that is automatically a question of undue discrimination. Yes, there is a difference.
Well, it is. Give me, go ahead.
Is this back to de minimis?
No, Your Honor, I'm making a different point now. The commission did make that point, and I will get to that in a minute. But here, let me go through, if I could, the commission's analysis on this question, because it was a two-step analysis. And the first step of that analysis was looking at whether, let me start with the point that 2003 set forth a very clear rule on when.
The comparability rule.
Yeah.
Well, what it is, Your Honor, is that there's no compensation for reactive power in the dead band unless there's an issue of comparability. And what that results in is, in any given position, a transmission owner has the option of choosing to compensate or not compensate within the dead band.
Can you show me any sentence in any of the 2003 orders that addresses the kind of competitive disadvantage involved here, or purports to define comparability, as it's conceived in that order, as the sole type of the sole framework for analyzing undue competitive advantage.
In 2003, Your Honor.
Discrimination. Sorry.
The way the rule is structured, it necessarily permits different transmission owners to choose whether to compensate or not compensate in the deadband. And there's no exception made for cases where there are generators who are in competition with each other who are in the different zones. It necessarily contemplates that there are going to be generators who are selling into the same bulk power markets who are getting different compensation within the deadband.
I don't understand that. Without what we're discussing here, the two schedules, two A schedules, what would be the difference between one generator and another generator as far as the compensation? Why would there be a difference?
A considerable difference, Your Honor, because of the zonal rate structure in the RTO, which was part of the commission's analysis in this case.
Structure, which is something the commission has created, but you seem to be, the commission seem to be saying, and you're not responsible for that, they seem to be saying it's all right to discriminate because they're in different zones. But that's a difference the commission has created. It seems to be circular to say, we created this difference, therefore it's possible to discriminate on the basis that there is a difference, but the difference is one the commission created. Why should generators be compensated any differently depending upon which zone they're in? What's the rationale that keeps that from being an arbitrary and capricious and therefore undue discrimination?
Well, Your Honor, as to the zonal rate structure, the rationale for that, and this is stated in Order Number 494, which is the PJM case we discuss in our brief, the rationale behind the zonal rate structure is the fact that the Midwest ISO is this enormous amalgamation of independent transmission.
But what is the connection between the rationale for the zonal rate structure and the question of whether a generator gets compensated for this power, the reactive power?
Because, Your Honor, in the zonal rate structure, you don't look at rates on an ISO-wide basis. You look at rates as to each individual zone.
You seem to me to be back in the same circle that the commission was on to begin with, that what looks like circular reasoning, that we have created a difference between these generators and other generators, therefore they can be treated differently. The zonal rate structure, having zonal rates does not inherently, as I can see, as far as I can see, the commission certainly hasn't explained why, having zonal rates does not inherently mean that one generator is going to be compensated any differently than another generator for reactive power. The commission has not made the connection, and I'm asking you if you can.
Well, Your Honor, they're already being compensated differently for reactive power. I mean, for example, if you look at the Midwest ISOTO proposal at Joint Appendix page 153, they make the point that the rate for reactive power in one instance is 0.15 per megawatt, and the reactive power rate in another zone is 0.49 per megawatt. I mean, the fact that everybody...
Sorry, but that's dependent on the zone of the customer?
That's depending
so
on the
all
zone.
All generators selling to that customer end up confronting the same cost, right?
Well, it's dependent on where the load sinks. But assuming that it depends on whether the load is in the same zone as the generator or not. But yes, it does depend on where the load sinks, whether it's a 2A or a mm-hmm. Schedule 2 zone.
So there's no intergenerator competitive disadvantage, is there, near HYPO?
And
what does it come from if there is one?
Well, it comes from the fact that different generators, if they are largely, I mean, the zones encompass 13 states. It's not as though they are all serving the same customers. And if you're in a very large zone that encompasses a large territory, likely you're selling to customers who are in your same zone. So you're
But apart from this order, any generator throughout the region selling to any customer in any particular zone is going to face the same transmission costs, right?
Well, the same reimbursement for reactive power.
Right. Well, and therefore aggregate transmission costs.
Right, Your Honor, but
how does that justify the Schedule 2 and 2A differentiation?
The Schedule 2A and two, the first thing that the commission looked at in deciding that this was acceptable was in looking at whether there had to be an ISO-wide compensation policy. And that was the first determination that the commission made, and it found that it did not, because it was applying Order Number 2003, and Order Number 2003 allows the transmission provider to be not only the RTO, but also the transmission owners. And then the commission looked at whether there was a comparability issue with respect to the ISO, which would have required a single rate, and found that there was none. Finding that there was no requirement under 2003 that the RTO be the transmission provider, the commission looked to see whether the zonal variation between the reactive power rate was discriminatory as alleged by the petitioners or not, and found that it was not.
It was not because?
It was because there was a pre-existing zonal rate structure under which generators
just,
were...
We've just been through the exercise of developing that till we got to this particular order. That did not create an artificial distinction between generators based on the particular zone they happen to be in, right?
But, Your Honor, the second part of that analysis is, in this pre-existing zonal rate structure, given that a straightforward application of the 2003 rule permits different transmission owners to make different decisions about whether they're going to compensate in the dead band or not. And so it's just...
Let me ask you this. Is there language in any of the 2003 orders making clear that that choice can be... includes any choice that produces arbitrary distinctions in costs faced by generators from zone to zone?
Your Honor, this issue of generators...
And that's a straightforward question. Is there any language in any of those orders that seems to encompass that? I didn't see any cited in your brief.
What I'm saying, Your Honor, is that the rule itself specifically contemplates that, because the rule says a transmission owner gets to choose. And there's no exception made for the fact that generators who are interconnected with different transmission owners may be in competition.
Saying they get to choose doesn't say they get to discriminate. They could choose to charge nobody or choose to charge everybody, but that does not empower them inherently to make a distinction between generators. And as Judge Williams points out, you've pointed to no language, and there isn't any, that seems to make that statement. And if it did, you might have a problem that 203 itself might violate 205 of the Act. But where in 203 or the Act does the commission get the authority to distinguish between set generators just on the basis of which zone they're lying in? And the zones are defined by where the transmission entities are, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Right. So all you're saying when you say they're in different zones is that they have different transmission entities.
And that's precisely...
Therefore, the transmission entity can discriminate. That doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
Well, that's precisely the basis on which in 2003... transmission owners are allowed to make a distinction between whether they want to compensate in the dead band or whether they don't.
Right, but they have to make that decision, or they could have, they could make that decision with respect to everybody, I guess. In any event, Section 205 of the Act requires there by not be undue discrimination without regard to what 2003 of the rules say, right?
Well, but Your Honor, if there were a discrimination issue with regard to this issue, as you know, this issue of compensation in the dead band was before this court in the Nayrook case. And if there was an issue,
they don't have to compensate in the dead band. But have we ever held that generators within the same RTO could be compensated differently than other generators?
What 203 says is that generators interconnected with different transmission owners can be compensated differently. That's what the rule says. And in this case, the commission's first step was to say, do we have to, because it is an ISO.
How does that square with the requirements of 205 of the Act? I mean, undue discrimination doesn't start with 2003 of the commission's adoption. Commission can't override Congress. If the 2003 permits discrimination, isn't it itself violative of 205 of the Act?
But, Your Honor, if there were any such objection, it should have been raised at the time of 2003. And that's what the collateral attack cases that I cited in my brief speak to. In those cases, it was people who later on were trying, the Georgia Industrial Group in the city of Nephi, people who later on were saying that order number 636.
Don't you think that you would have been here or somebody from your agency arguing that that challenge was unripe before it showed an actual discrimination against the petitioner?
Well, Your Honor,
or that they lack standing?
The challenge that...
I'd been very disappointed if you weren't.
Well, I wouldn't want to disappoint you, but
I think you would have been there saying that at the time.
But the challenge that was raised was the same sort of challenge that the transmission owners didn't want to have to compensate everyone within the deadband. They wanted to be able to just compensate their own generators under the theory that they didn't need.
And
okay, and the commission said no.
Right.
And the court said that it was fine to say no. Fine. That in itself doesn't seem to encompass the idea of the sort of discrimination involved here.
But what I'm saying, Your Honor, is that when that rule was before this court, would have been the time for somebody to have been raising any discrimination claims if they felt that this aspect of the reactive power rule were unjust and unreasonable, and nobody raised
it. Would that have been an unripe challenge if they had not yet been affected by it? I mean, it was apparent at the time that there could be a challenge on the basis of affiliated and non-affiliated. It was not yet apparent that there would be a Schedule 2 and a Schedule 2A, was it? I mean, the rule may have permitted that possibility, but until there was some ox actually gored by it, would it have been time to bring the petition?
Well, Your Honor, it would have been time to bring the petition with respect to people who just, generators who say, I'm in a one zone and I compete with generators in another zone, and if I am not paid and they are, that is a discriminatory issue.
Yeah, that would
issue.
Still have been hypothetical at that point. And once you get Schedule 2 and 2A, we have a concrete Article 3 controversy then. But I'm not at all sure we would have had one before, would we?
Well, in my view, Your Honor, it should have been raised in 2003 if there was an issue with that, because the rule is quite clear from 2003. And
assuming we don't share that view, is there any other explanation of the difference in rate other than the fact that you're dealing with a different transmission facility?
Well, there is also the point that the actual costs associated with the generation of reactive power are very minimal.
Is that any different between the ones who charge under Schedule 2 and Schedule 2A?
There are differences in the amounts that are charged under Schedule 2 and Schedule 2A.
Yeah, but that is not related to the supposed de minimis nature of the cost, which raises the question itself, is $11 million de minimis? You may be to a government entity, but
well, I believe that is one transmission owner. You're not talking about one particular generator, then. That's not one generator's compensation.
Are there numbers in the record on how it might affect a particular generator's day-to-day competitive position? I mean, I guess I would think a completely arbitrary difference in cost assignment would be problematic unless there were numbers showing that it was just so tiny that no one would even think about it.
Well, the commission found in its orders that it wasn't an arbitrary difference in cost assignment because it was a straightforward.
Suppose you don't win on that. You're really relying on the de minimis theory.
Well, there certainly is evidence in the record as to why the additional cost, the incremental cost of producing reactive power are de minimis. There's explanation of that. There's explanation in...
Why it is. Are there numbers as to how de minimis?
Well, the point is that, I mean, there aren't actual numbers, but the explanation is, which is in our brief, is that you have to be generating real power in order to produce reactive power.
That doesn't give me any numbers or proportions at all. Mm-hmm.
Except that it tells you that, except for the cost of one regulator that you have to attach to the generator, everything you use to produce reactive power, you have to have any way to produce real power, which is the point of having
the same quantity of energy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Same amount of energy?
It's the same, because you have
same number of tons of coal? I mean, the same coal's producing the same?
It's not even exactly that, Your Honor. It's the same coal, because you have to already be producing actual power in order to...
That would be a good argument for not requiring compensation for reactive power. It seems to me to be totally irrelevant to the question of whether it's permissible to allow compensation at different rates to similarly situated generators. The fact that you are producing reactive power anyway might be a good argument, is a good argument, for why you should not have to compensate reactive power. But I do not see how that at all supports the proposition that you can compensate some generators on a different basis than the other generators. How does that support that proposition?
What it supports that proposition in the sense that they were complaining that, I mean, actually this goes to, and where they raised the competition issue was really in the intrazonal context when they were talking about the difference between transmission.
I think that your time is up, and I don't think we're getting anywhere, so thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
How much time does he have left? Okay, you have
4 minutes
if you choose to use it.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Apart from Judge Santel's ripeness and standing points about this hypothetical challenge to what might have flowed from 2003, are there exercises of the choice that was given to transmission owners in that order that are harmless from a interzonal competition point of view?
I think the answer is no, Your Honor, but I may not be fully understanding your question.
Well, in other words, the Commission's argument is, well, look, after we said that in 2003 that transmission owners can make a choice between compensation and not compensation, all they have to do is to be equal as between affiliated and non-affiliated, are there exercises of that power to choose that would not have the discriminatory impacts involved in what has followed?
I think the answer to that is no. I don't think it's possible that they could do it. And the reason is...
So then why didn't you raise this petition question then?
Yeah, and if I could, I think this goes to a point I'd like to point to in the record, both JA-121 and JA-72. This is paragraphs 71 to 72 in the rehearing order and paragraph 57. What the Commission says there, and it reiterates it since brief, is that this is an issue of first impression. And in fact, in paragraph 57, what the Commission says is that orders number 2003 and 2003A were written to apply generically to traditional utilities outside an RTO. And although the Commission has put the focus on the choice issue here, I really don't think that's a fair characterization of what 2003 is saying. What it really is saying, and this is why it was a facial attack there and why this as-applied attack is different, is that in Order 2003, it says when you choose and there's no discrimination that occurs, you have that choice. So the choice flows from the fact that there's no discrimination. And Order 2003 says as long as there's no discrimination in the traditional utility context, then sure, you can choose. In answer to your question, Judge Williams, if there was some proposal here that would not discriminate, they could choose to do whatever they wanted to do. But the problem here is, of course, once it discriminates, then Order 2003 can't answer the question, and there needs to be a further explanation as to why either that discrimination is okay, we don't think that explanation is available, but they could at least try, or some other explanation as to why 2003 covers this other than just the sort of the ipsit dixit that they get to choose, which I don't think works. The only other point I was going to make is on the de minimis competition point. You're right that there are no numbers, at least to our knowledge, in the record to support the Commission. But it should be an easy question that there is a problem here because, as you know from the number of reactive power cases that have come before this court, this is a hot issue. There's a big concern, and the reason there's a big concern is because of the competitive harms. Regardless of the absolute number, everybody is competing in such competitive markets, and that's exactly why Order 2003 addressed this issue at length and why there's been a series of litigations after that fact. And with that, I'd thank the court and sit down unless there's any other questions.
Seeing none, thank you, counsel.
Thank you,
Your Honor. Committed. Call the next case.